Welcome back to the Faculty Factory podcast. I'm Kim Skorupski here at Hopkins, looking at one of our colleagues and wonderfully celebrated professors, Dr. Elizabeth M. Jaffe. Hi, Liz. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
Well, let me tell you folks why Dr. Jaffe is here. Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe, she has lots of letters, MD, and lots of FAACRs and FACPs and FAASs. FAIO, she is the Dana and Albert Cubby Broccoli Professor of Oncology, the Deputy Director of the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins, the Co-Director of the Gastrointestinal Cancers Program, and the Inaugural Director of the Cancer Convergence Institute. There's a lot going on there. And the reason why I invited Dr. Liz Jaffe here today is because she is the recent recipient of our very prestigious Dean's Distinguished Mentoring Award. And everybody knows about mentoring. We have lots of evidence and literature supporting the value of mentoring. It's one of those things that when it's done well, it's just a thing of beauty. Liz Jaffe is one of those people who does mentoring like she was meant, put on the earth to do. So we want to learn from Liz about her mentoring journey, who her mentors were, how she got to be recognized as such a distinguished mentor, and maybe kind of like what she loves about mentoring, and just going to have a little mentoring conversation. So thanks again, Liz. And can you maybe lead us off with telling us if you recall back in your training, a good mentor or maybe bad mentors that you had? Like, what do you reflect on when you think about mentoring for you?
Thanks, Kim, for asking that question. I've had both. I've had some really good mentors, and then I've had what I call tormentors. They tormented me. But you learn from both. And sometimes you learn more from those who really didn't meet the conditions of what I would consider a good mentor. For instance, one of my first mentors was a very nice person, but really didn't know how to think about someone else's career. And I felt used. I felt that I was providing for them, but I wasn't receiving. I was helping them, you know, with their lab, with their grants, with their interactions with other people, but not really getting anything from my career development. There was nothing. So I realized that, you know, it should be a two-way process, not a one-way process. You know, I have responsibilities as a mentee, but I felt that my mentor should have had responsibilities. And I've had two of those, but I can tell you that I've had many individuals who I didn't even look for, who decided they wanted to be my mentor. And, you know, I'm a woman. At the time when I was coming through the research, the medical training systems, there weren't a lot of women. And I will tell you that both men and women were good to me. Both men and women were not so good to me. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a gender issue. I think it's really a person issue. There are people who take mentorship seriously, and that's who I wanted to learn from. That's who I wanted to emulate. And then there are people who either they never learned to be a mentor or, you know, I hate to say it, in every field, there are people who are more selfish. It's more about them than others. And then there are people who want to really believe that they've given to others, paid it forward, right? Or so paid it forward. Yeah, I think it's paid it forward, right? And what I've also learned is that, you know, mentors isn't going to provide everything for you. And I think that you have to, as a mentee, seek different mentors for different situations. But what I found that's beautiful about mentorship is that typically you develop relationships forever. And I have relationships with my mentors still, and they're beautiful relationships. And I have tried to provide that to my mentees. And I have faculty and students and postdocs who are at Hopkins, but who are at other institutions in other countries And even if I don't see my mentees on a daily basis anymore or talk with them on a daily basis, I'm still there for them. And I do see them and hear from them and help them. And it's just, it feels very good. Good to know that you're helping someone else's career.
Well, Liz, thank you for sharing, you know, your personal story. And while you were talking about your experiences, you said something that really struck me, is that when we talk about, you know, early career faculty members coming into academia, and we talk about the importance of who's your primary mentor, who's your content mentor, you may have a process mentor, someone who mentors you are getting promoted, you have to have team mentorship, as you talked about, Liz, and peer mentors. We think about mentor, all these people. And then you said, and I've had people who sought me out to mentor me. And that got me thinking about how we label people, or someone says, well, Dr. Jaffe, you know, who are your mentors that we can think of, person A, B, C, D, E? But sometimes it's also those people who come into our life in maybe some unexpected ways, at meetings, in the hallway, at a conference, and you start having a conversation with them, or you've said something that made them seek you out. And before you know it, you are having a transformational conversation and relationship with someone who maybe you wouldn't have thought of Dr. Liz Jaffe as my mentor, but oh my gosh, I just think I was a drive-by mentored. Dr. Liz Jaffe just said something to me and she just mentored me and I didn't even realize she's one of those people. So you're making me think that about the importance of expanding our vision and our readiness to be mentored and willingness to step in as a mentor for people who may not even look at us that way. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and I think you said it exactly right. I mean, one of my first mentors who was not at my institution was when I was an early career faculty, and I was at a grant review. I was ad hocking. You know, you start out as an ad hoc when you're early in your career, and there was a senior person there who was in my field, and she said, let's go to dinner. Huh? I said, great. And I was like, I knew this, and it turned out to be a woman at the time. I know this woman. She's amazing. She wants me to go to dinner with her. Wow. And it was transformative for me because we talked about careers, and her career was a little different than mine. She was more on the clinical end. I was more on the translational end. But, you know, we talked about just different things in career and science. And it was one of the most transformative meetings I had for my career development at that time. And so I remember that, and I do that. I go to meetings and I'll go to poster sessions, and there'll be people who just really, I think, wow, this is a person who's going to really, you know, transform research, transform clinical care. I want to talk with them more. Let me generate a relationship. Or I teach at national courses, and I'll meet people there who are fellows, and I'll say, look, let's keep this conversation going. And then I help them as they're making decisions, whether it's a decision for their first job or a decision on a grant application, or, you know, they have some research, they're thinking about a paper. And it's just fun. It's fun. It's exciting. In fact, I love doing that because I learn more from young people. Mm-hmm. Than people who are my own colleagues. That's my science improves by hearing these ideas from young people. Yeah. If I had it my way, which I sort of do, I've created my own environment. I'm the oldest in my group. I love having young people all the time. They're inspiring. They're energetic. They're mm-hmm. thinking out of the box.
Right. Right.
You know, it's limitless. So for me, that's one of the positives of mentoring or being a mentor.
Oh, I can see
from your young people.
I feel your energy just blasting through to me. And you're highlighting something that I think a lot of mentors, let's take the mentor view, go, oh, we always think these poor mentors, it's an uncompensated effort. They're not paid to do this. Everybody wants to work with Dr. Liz Jaffe. Oh my gosh, she's so busy. All these roles, all these responsibilities, leader in so many ways. And now I'm just another person who's going to go knocking on her door going, Dr. Jaffe, would you mentor me? Or I don't want to talk to her at that conference. She's a famous, or he's a famous so-and-so. And what you're projecting to me is that you, the mentor, yes, it's an obligation. Yes, it's a commitment. Yes, it takes a little bit of work to introduce somebody to somebody or to have a conversation and to take. Yes, and it fills your balloon. As you're saying, as the mentor, we are inspired by this, the creativity and meeting people who are brand new to the field and who are yet to be jaded by, you know, repeated rejections from NIH and journals. So maybe they're not, they're kind of like, they have more, you know, optimism, and it gets you excited about things. So you're talking about the experience from a mentor's perspective of, I am also getting something from this. This is not just my giving. This is something that is in our hearts and our heads. We love science. We love medicine. We love serving. So when we see, you know, someone who is on the cusp of making major decisions or transitions, we love being part of it.
Yeah, no, it's really fun for me, and seeing people grow and develop, and I don't know. I don't know why everyone doesn't feel that way.
you can see like some people on, we all know mentors who are, and it kind of goes to maybe your tour mentors, your D mentors, your fall mentors, you know, those kind of people who think, well, of course I'm a mentor. I'm a professor. I mean, duh. People who think, well, you know, I've seen a movie, so I can act, you know, I've read a book, so I can write a book. You know, I took a class, so I can teach. Maybe not so much. Some of those people who are just, it's, they feel so put upon, or they're so about what have you done for me lately, Liz Jaffe? You know, why should I mentor you? What's in it for me? That, you know, selfish, egocentric perspective. We know people like that. So those are the kind of people, you know, who, you know, we have to warn folks about that, yes, may have fabulous content expertise, may have be crazy funded their whole career, and there's something to learn there, but it may not be, you know, you have to be careful about balancing what the return on investment. What are you going to do for them, and what are you getting in return? If you think, well, I'm going to get 3 publications out of this, and so this is kind of the deal with this when you work with this one. But knowing like where are your boundaries, but some people, they don't have that, I guess, the innate kind of joy. It's more utilitarian. That some right. folks, it's a utilitarian, it's a transactional relationship versus transformational.
Exactly. And you know, I'll add that, you know, as the older I get, you know, when I look at other scientists who are just amazing scientists, you know, there are people who are recognized through Nobel Prizes or National Academies or, you know, other prizes. And I don't respect someone because they got a Nobel. I don't respect someone because they're in the National Academy of Medicine. I respect someone because they're a brilliant scientist and they care about mentoring other people. They're generous to other people. They mm-hmm. share research with other people. They help other people. Because in the end, at least for me, why am I doing research, especially at a school of medicine? I'm doing it to help patients, to help people with diseases. And you could say the same for even a basic scientist. Why are you doing it? To help society. Mm-hmm. So if you lose sight of that, then of course you're not going to be a good mentor. It's all about you.
Yeah, right. Well said. Generosity of spirit. And it's for some people, obviously, like for you, Dr. Liz Jaffe, this comes naturally. Other people, it takes more work. And I can see why when I say it takes more work, it's tough. This is not easy. And especially these environments, academic medicine are not easy environments. So let me put on my hat being a little bit, I'll be more generous to some of our tour mentors. It's tough being a mentor. You're constantly, you know, trying to get the research dollars because you have people in your lab whose income depends on you, and they have families and they have mortgages and they have to pay rent. So you have to keep the money going. And then you have to generate scholarly publications to as evidence that you need more funding. and you're fighting with tight budgets and you need equipment and you need space. And it's a constant, never ending struggle. And it's a lot of pressure. So I can empathize with some people who think, and I just got people lined up wanting me to mentor them. And I just don't have the time in the day to do that. And this is where the, like you said, well, why are you doing this? You have to find a balance of the yes and. Yes, these things are important. And there's this one moment of time when this mentee is in front of me. And what is more important at this point? What is more? There will always be grant deadlines. There will always be meetings about budget. This is a human being who at this moment, I can spend time with this person. So it's that tension, right? Always managing that tension of wanting to do the generous thing, the right thing, the asking myself, why am I here? What is the purpose of all this in life? Really? If it's not about people or relationships, who cares? But we have to be practical and realistic and say, well, I just can't spend my whole waking moment during the week with people. I do have to generate some work. So how do you balance all this? Because you clearly have many, many responsibilities here at Hopkins and nationally and internationally. How do you purposely like put in your calendar? Like, how do you do this other than like on the fly at the conference and having conversations with people? You know, how do you balance it, Liz?
I think that's a really important question. You've said a couple of things that just made me think about how I do things. So first off, the leadership I've taken on are in translational research programs. I don't do administration, really. I mean, I do administration programs, but the reality is it's science administration. And so that's part of my whole program. So I have not decided to become a chairman or a cancer center director or a dean, not because I don't respect those positions. Those are very hard positions to be in, but because I do like mentorship. That is my major goal, whether it's mentorship of students, postdocs, or faculty. So that is my major day. My major day is that I spend from 8 in the morning till usually 6 at night, and I would say 80% of it are time on my calendar to meet with my people, to meet with other people who need my mentorship, who just need maybe one or two, you know, days a month of just kind of asking me my advice. And I'll do that too. They may not be in my scientific program, but they're in the cancer center. Or there may be people who were in my program who are now, you know, at a different institution who, you know, want to still just run career advice by me or grant advice. And I do that with a number of people outside of Johns Hopkins on a regular basis. This is a regular basis. So these are all people on my calendar. If you looked at my calendar, you would find 80% are my either current mentees or people who were mentees who I still provide advice to. And I always say my best day is when I have met with my trainees and we've talked science. Whether, you know, one of my mentees mentioned to me the other day that they were pretty impressed because they came into my office with negative data, right? And instead of my being disappointed or trying to support them not to feel bad, I said, well, but wait a second, is it negative or is it just not the answer you wanted? And maybe we should be thinking in this direction. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that impacted them so much. I was just doing what I thought, you know, it's what occurred to me. Yeah. And in the end, what they said to me was it was even more important to them because I raised some questions and they had come in feeling a little frustrated and they walked out thinking, wow, that's a good point.
you're reminding me of at the gym, these memes about the gym, like best day is leg day. And like these memes, like, what did you do? Today's leg day. To me, it's like, you need this t-shirt that says best day, science day. And it's like the total, like my best day is when I'm talking science. And that aha of when someone is so dejected, I couldn't reject the null hypothesis. But yeah, that's good. So now we know it's not that. What else is it? So thank you for getting that null off the list. Now we know we don't have to look at that again. What else? So that spirit, that encouraging, inspiring spirit is sometimes what we need, right? When we're so connected, because this is so hard. And what's great about mentors is they've been there. They've done that. They've seen
it. Exactly.
This is not my first rodeo. Believe me, you're going to be okay. And let me tell you why. And seeing that frowny turned upside downy, that's gotta totally make you so like, yeah, I can see after leg day.
You're so good. I didn't realize what I said would make a person feel better. You know, I mean, I do want to make them feel better. Don't get me wrong, but I didn't realize that they would walk out there feeling so much better than they did walking in. Cause I tell my students and postdocs, most of what you're going to do is not going to be, you know, positive data. And in fact, if it were, there are two problems with it. One, I wouldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. But two, you're not learning. You're not learning. And I'm not learning. And we're not changing the field because it's the unexpected that changed the field.
Right.
Right?
Is the nature of science. Yeah. Isn't it so frustrating when, I mean, I could feel the frustration. I don't know what I was watching and listening to yesterday where, you know, the whole COVID thing and how the lay public was angry at scientists because we change your minds every day and every day it's a new way. Yeah, that's science. We evolve.
We're learning too. Yeah.
We're learning and we're not purposely trying to confuse things. This is every day. Well, they change their mind on things. Yeah. If we didn't change our minds, there's a problem. You have to change. You get new data, you change your mind on things, right? That's science.
Yeah, I mean, scientific problems are like a puzzle. You're constantly getting new pieces and, you know, you're evolving. So it wouldn't be exciting if we didn't, you know, have, you know, that attitude, that perspective. I mean, you know, otherwise it would be, you know, every day you'd be doing the same thing, just adding to what you were doing. That's not why we're in this field.
No, exactly. Liz, can you give some advice to the early career faculty members who are listening to this now? What are a couple rules or like rules of thumb or just advice you'd give to mentees to manage the mentoring relationship best? Like what should a good mentee do or like not do? What comes to your mind? Like the best kind of mentee you like to work with? What are they doing?
Right. So I think first of all, I tell mentees, you know, when I'm interviewing someone for my laboratory to become one of my mentees, to become one of their mentors, I tell them they have to interview me too. I can't help them if we don't have an honest, easy relationship where they can feel they can give me feedback that, you know, to help me mentor them better and where I can give them feedback to help them become, you know, a better scientist. And this is important because, you know, we all have egos. We all want only positives. If you think about it, it makes us feel better. But unfortunately, that's not what a mentee-mentor relationship is. Now, feedback should be given in a positive way on both sides. I don't want them telling me I'm a terrible mentor because I didn't do this. Tell me how I could be better. And I will appreciate that. I need honesty. I can't work with someone if they're not going to be honest. So a mentee has responsibilities. They also have responsibilities in, scheduling regular meetings, meeting that schedule. So I don't want them, you know, telling me they can't meet up with me. I mean, once in a while, yes, of course, but, you know, This is an important time for the two of us to, you know, talk about their research, talk about their career. I think that mentees also need to always be prepared. I tell mentees to have an agenda, you know, to have their data available, you know, to have an agenda that includes not only their research projects, but their career advice they need at the time. You know, I have a number of different mentees. And so I can't remember every single thing. And it's not my responsibility. They are responsible for their career as well. This is a partnership. And so I want to empower my mentees to be proactive, so I could do the best for them. And again, as a mentor, I realize that the mentor-mentee relationship is special and everyone is different. So I'm not trying to fit them into some, framework that worked for someone else. I'm trying to learn who they are, while we're developing this relationship so I could do the best for them. They're an individual. I want them to realize I believe that. I respect them as an individual. But again, I need them to help me. Help me be a good mentor.
Liz, you just said something that kind of blew my mind. I hate to admit this, but it's a cookie cutter approach, because I'm thinking here at Hopkins, you know, when we teach courses on mentoring and menteeing, being a good mentor, good mentee, we have like a template, like a suggested contract, if you will, like as a good mentee, I'm going to hold myself accountable. I'll schedule the meetings. I'll come prepared. I'll be respectful of your time. I'll be appreciative, show gratitude. But, you know, you just said something that, oh my gosh, we need to modify this kind of suggestion, because we have this kind of template organization without, I think, really emphasizing to mentors, you can't just necessarily take the template and slap it on every mentee like an assembly line. Exactly. Thou shalt. I mean, it's not a one must do these things. Yes, that's the guidelines. And I need to be really more mindful of what is this mentee's personality preferences. Is she more an S, detail focused, or N, an intuitive? How does she like to get in? Is she a thinker or a feeler? Where are her strengths? Is she a collaborator, a facilitator? Where are the challenges or the bugaboos that might hold her up? So I can't think of like, why can't she be a good mentor? Like, you know, Javier, he was so good. And what's wrong? That it's this whole personalizing that does take a lot more work, or at least thoughtfulness on the mentor side of holding someone accountable to basic standards while also appreciating the different skills or history that might be, you know, jamming them up. So that is so important, Liz. That's why you're our Dean's Distinguished Mentor. Yeah. So how do you do that, Liz? How do you raise your awareness of the unique? Like, can you think of a person, a mentee recently where you're like, okay, I'm going to need to work with him on, or, ooh, this is new. How do you do that? How do you train the mentors to have that antennae?
Right. So, and that's why it's important to have regular meetings, because you really learn about a person, and I learn about their style, you know, and it takes a couple of months working with them to realize what their strengths and what their, you know, I don't want to use the word weakness. We all have our strengths and we all have things that aren't our strengths, right? And you can work with people to build those other areas that they need, but it's going to take time and interactions and getting to know someone and know how they receive feedback too, because let's face it, you know, we all have insecurities. And so what I don't want to do is really worsen those insecurities. So I have to figure out, how do I make them feel better, but still give them the right positive feedback. So, you know, for instance, the first time I go over, you know, a presentation or a manuscript, you know, I have a lot of suggestions. And, you know, I'll say to them, please don't take this wrong. This is my job. My job is to help you do better. This was a good starting point. Now, I could have said this is terrible. Sometimes it is terrible. I'm going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I would never say to someone, this is terrible, because that's not right. Because everyone comes, as you were just saying, with different expertise, with different training, right? They come from different cultures, everything. It all goes into who we are. And so I have to figure out that starting place. And then I could help build where I need to help build. And I also tell them, wow, you know, most of my trainees don't have that expertise at this stage. So they feel like, and it's true. So they feel like, you know, there are things that they're bringing to the table that are already pretty well formed. And I want to give them credit for that, make them feel good about that. So it's a balance. And again, you know, it's only because we're human. It's not because anyone is bad or good or in between. We're all human, and I'm just trying to help, you know, on areas where, you know, they need help. And that's really what I try to tell them. And I tell them about me. I tell them I wasn't that good when I started on this or that. So they know that, you know, they can look at me because they've come to me as their mentor. So they must think I've done pretty well. I assume. And so, you know, they see that I had struggles at that stage. I'm honest with them. I had those struggles. I had struggles here and here. You know, I worked on this and this, and it's true. So I think knowing that I had struggles and I overcame them, I think that's a very important point that I provide that makes them feel better when they're struggling.
I think, you know, in addition, Liz, in addition to you talking about, and definitely I feel the generosity, you are talking about, you're just a curious scientist. And so you're curious about people. You're curious. And I think that's kind of a good starting point to, because you're now, you're making me rethink of, think of my coaching relationships and how when I get to know and building a relationship and a rapport with faculty members that I coach, yes, some, after a number of meetings with some coaching clients, they're saying, Kim, I'm really going to need you to crack the whip with me. I need you to hold me accountable. I need you to text me next Thursday and remind me or ask me where the something something is. And others will say that, you know, when I say, how would you like me to hold you accountable? They're like, I'm good. I don't need anybody screaming. I had a coach who screamed in my ear and I didn't like it. And I'm very responsible. I don't need these things. I will report back to you when. So that if I were to have apply a cookie cutter approach to all my mentees, to all my student trainees, all my coaching clients, it's doomed. It's doomed. And so your curiosity, I think, as a scientist and as a person is pivotal. It's almost like thinking, I'm curious about this person. I want to learn more about this person. I love the quote of Abraham Lincoln said, I do not like, supposedly said, I didn't know him, supposedly said, I do not like that man. I must get to know him better. So that same kind of curiosity as a mentor. Oh, that's interesting. What a cool skill. What a great gift. She doesn't even realize that she's good at that. Or, oh my goodness, I made an assumption here. I assumed that he knew how to write that paper, or I assumed she knew that I'm making assumptions here. Let me dial my assumptions back. So I love how you're talking that your science brain is like sunken into your sciencey heart, and you're applying that curiosity into everything. And I think that's probably a really great aspect for mentors out there. Be curious. Yeah,
I think you're absolutely correct. That's exactly the point. And, you know, from my point of view, I love just learning about different people. It's just, you know, it's just really interesting. And, you know, I always equate it, the people that work for me, I feel like they're my children in the laboratory, my children in my clinical trials program. You know, I have two girls, they're twins, fraternal twins. They couldn't be more different than any two people who work for me. And, you know, as I've always, you know, told my daughters, you know, and I have great relationships with them. I'm very proud of that. I love being with them. I think they love being with me. We travel together a lot and we have a good relationship. And they're different. They're different relationships. The things that I do with one are often different than the things I do with the other because they're just so different. But I enjoy being with both of them. And growing up, they both needed different things. They both had strengths and they both had areas where they needed help. And so it's the same in, you know, when I have mentees, everybody's different. Everyone has their strengths and everyone has areas where they need help. And I can't be everything to everyone. And I tell them that. And I tell them that you need more than one mentor because it's good to have multiple mentors who provide different things. There are mentors who provide career advice. There are mentors who are in your scientific field who can provide better scientific advice. There are mentors who are just going to be inspiring. Some mentors will provide two of those things. But the point is that I think I realize I'm not perfect either, and I can't provide everything, but I try to provide what I can provide, and I give them recommendations if they need help in other areas.
That also humility. So that, I think, is another, what I'm hearing from you is, in addition to generosity, curiosity, is the humility of saying, I don't know. Gosh, this is a new one for me. I'll have to, let me explore this. Let me see who else. I think I know somebody here or there. And also the humility to say, you know, I'm sorry. I think I just said something that was an ouchie. I apologized. I mean, I've done that all. I do that, not, I shouldn't say all the time. but when I'm hangry, you know, hungry and angry, or I'm having a, just came off of a bad meeting and I'm stressed out, and not taking the time to be mindful of that, and then maybe kind of barking at someone, or I'm, my usual go-to is to be sarcastic. And so I'm like, gosh, you know, that's did not, I just heard what I said, or I just saw the expression on your face. Yeah, I apologize for that. That was not cool. Please forgive me. I'm having a tough, I'm in a bad moment right now. And so that humility, it's tough, but it's also comes from building relationships and building a foundation where people then trust you. No, Kim, I got you. Or no, Liz, I mean, I trust you. We're in a relationship. This is not perfect. I'm not perfect. We're not perfect. We're going to mess up. Last week you told me to do such and such, and now you're telling me to do this. Yeah, I messed up, or I didn't mean to do that. That was a mistake. Sorry, my bad. That's just part of the whole, that's part of life, right? That's part of life, being humble.
Yeah.
Wow, great advice. Well, Dr. Liz Jaffe, I think such a great inspiration to all of us about mentoring. I love your spirit of generosity and curiosity and humility. And I think you've given a lot of mentees, and we're all mentees, because no matter where we are on the career, you know, trajectory here, we all are mentees. We all have mentors. And you've given great advice for those of us who are mentors, and we're all mentors. So we're all doing both, right? Even if you're brand new to academic medicine, there are learners and patients and students and colleagues who are looking at you, because you are now a brand new professor or an assistant professor somewhere. So we're all mentoring and menteeing all the time. And I think you've given us some really nice foundational pieces to remember and reflect on. And I really appreciate you being on the Faculty Factory podcast. And I'm going to leave the last few moments for you to give us some parting words of wisdom and some of your thoughts as we wrap up here.
Wow, thank you. So, you know, I'm going to give you a quote of one of my favorite writers. And this is something that I read from Maya Angelou. She said, "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel." And I think that says it all, right? For a mentor, you're giving what you can. And hopefully in the end, if you are remembered, it's going to be remembered for how you made someone feel. Very smart woman.
As are you, Dr. Elizabeth Jaffe. Thank you so much. That is just a perfect ending to this wonderful conversation. I appreciate you and all you do. And on behalf of all your mentees around the world, thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
Hey there, Faculty Factory listeners. As of April 1st, 2024, this podcast has had nearly 92,000 total downloads and YouTube views from listeners in 95 different countries. FacultyFactory.org has drawn over 42,000 web visits from users in 122 different countries. We are an international platform, and we would love to invite you to be a guest on our show. Our host, Dr. Kimberly Skorupski, makes this a very engaging and relaxing environment. And as the producer, I'll make any edits on the back end if you need it. Reach out if you'd like to be a guest or to nominate someone in our academic medicine community to be a guest. Visit the Contact Us page on facultyfactory.org to send us a message, or contact Dr. Skorupski directly at kskorupski@jhmi.edu.
Thanks for tuning in to Faculty Factory Podcast. The mission of the Faculty Factory is to build and support a community of leaders in faculty development who share tools, resources, wisdom, and encouragement in service to our faculty members, schools, and institutions. We encourage you to go to facultyfactory.org to find out more, get in touch with me, ask me any questions. Maybe you want to be interviewed on the podcast. Thanks for tuning in to Faculty Factory Podcast. We'll see you next time.
The Faculty Factory podcast and website is sponsored by the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine Office of Faculty. For more information, visit facultyfactory.org.